Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Tuesday night, it's 10 o'clock, and this is Matt Chat on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Ace Diamond, and tonight we have a very special show. Tonight is going to be an NWF WrestleBlast 2017 recap and a look ahead to what's in store for the future in the NWF. And tonight I will be joined by NWF CEO Nate Pelley. And so here in just a minute, we will be joined by NWF CEO Nate Pelley to discuss WrestleBlast 2017 and what the future holds for the NWF. So I do believe he is on the line.
Ace Diamond, can you hear me now?
I can hear you loud and clear. Nate Pelley, welcome to Matt Chat.
Thank you for having me on Matt Chat. Glad to be here.
Well, first of all, I've got to ask, because I was actually asked earlier today, how long have you been the NWF CEO?
You know, I've been the CEO of the Northern Wrestling Federation. Gosh, we're coming up on maybe, what, 4 years or so? There's been some time in there. I was the assistant CEO for a little while there, back when Chad Allegra, or Carl Anderson, call him what you will, was the CEO. I was his assistant CEO there for a little while. I believe it's been almost 4 years now that I've been the official acting CEO of the NWF. Time flies.
Yes, time does fly. So let's go ahead and jump right into WrestleBlast this past Saturday. It was a huge show. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to attend. So,
well, you're right. It was a really big show. You know, it's WrestleBlast has been one of the big events we do every January for years and years now, and always one of our bigger shows. And it was another big show this year.
Well, let's talk about the main event: Mr. Reality Check versus Titan. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You're the host.
I saw Bustin' Loose, and I saw that Pompano Joe tried to interject himself into that match, and it didn't exactly work out in his favor.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, Pompano Joe, he's been on this kick here as of late, thinking that he should be the number one contender for the NWF Championship. A couple weeks ago at Bone Crushers, he actually called me out and demanded to be inserted into the match this past week at WrestleBlast. I politely declined to do that, but Pompano Joe kind of took it upon himself to get involved in the match between the Titan and Mr. Reality Check. He interfered, tried to help Mr. Reality Check win the match, was unsuccessful in his interference. Titan was able to lock on that arm bar of his and got Mr. Reality Check to tap out. Pompano Joe, though, after the match, you know, again, running his mouth, he wants to be the number one contender, wants a title shot. I asked Titan, do you want to defend the title against Pompano Joe. It shot through the heart February 18th in Fairfield. Titan, he's a fighting champion. He said absolutely he would defend against Pompano Joe. So we're going to be seeing that big matchup coming up at Shot Through the Heart.
Now, with Pompano Joe's interference, do you think maybe he's gotten into Titan's head just a little bit?
Well, you know, I think Pompano Joe is one of those competitors in the Northern Wrestling Federation. Sometimes he gets overlooked a little bit. Sometimes maybe people don't take him as seriously as they should. You know, he likes to dance and go out there and do some kind of wacky things sometimes. But this is a guy, he's held every title in the NWF other than the NWF Championship itself at one time or another. He's a guy, he sent Nasty Russ packing. I don't think anybody expected that at FanFest last year. He defeated Nasty Russ in a loser leaves NWF match. You know, that shocked a lot of people. Pompano Joe's a dangerous guy, and you know, he's a guy that I think sometimes maybe uses that that goofiness to his advantage, and people maybe do underestimate him a little bit. And you know, maybe that's going to happen with Titan. I kind of doubt it, but we'll find out.
Speaking of people being overlooked, somebody else who believes they're being overlooked is Ricky Cardinal. Do you believe he's being overlooked as he claims?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, that's a good question. You know, Ricky Cardinal, he's got a lot of talent. There's absolutely no denying that. Is he being overlooked? You know, that's tough to say. I know lately he's been on this kick about wanting to make an impact. And, you know, as I mentioned at Wrestle Blast the other night, you know, he's been going around trying to get people to pay attention to him. Well, you know, I'm paying attention to him now after what he did at Wrestle Blast. And more importantly, Jesse Hyatt is paying attention to him after what he did at Wrestle Blast. And if you didn't see it or didn't get to catch Bustin' Loose, basically what happened, Jesse Hyatt and Ricardo had a match. Jesse Hyatt picked up a victory, you know, no big deal. Ricky Cardinal jumped him after the match, really beat him down, ended up choking him out with the tape from his wrist. Jesse was borderline unconscious, basically, and Ricky Cardinal delivered a knee to the side of Jesse's head, completely defenseless. Was Jesse Hyatt. He ended up having to be helped back, and we actually tried to get him a stretcher to get him out of the ring. Jesse, about halfway down the aisle, decided he did not want to be on that stretcher, and he tried to get back in there and mix it up some more with Ricky Cardinal. Those two guys are going to actually be coming back at Shot Through the Heart in a big rematch. And this time it's going to be a stretcher match because Ricky Cardinal wants to try to make an impact, try to get noticed. No better way than take on a veteran like Jesse Hyde in a high-profile match like this. And, you know, we'll see what Ricky Cardinal's made of at Shot Through the Heart.
And speaking of younger talents and the veterans, do you believe the younger talents as a whole are being overlooked by the veterans?
You know, having been around the NWF for a long time right now, I've seen the cycles happen over the years. When I first began with the Northern Wrestling Federation back in 2002, it was a big transitional time for the NWF. Guys like Wildcat Chris Harris, Prince Justice, or Biss, whatever you want to call them nowadays, Rob the Bomb Williams, Stamp Lickage, these guys had been big stars for the NWF for a long time. And then all of a sudden, you know, they started kind of moving and branching out to other places. And some of the younger guys came along, the guys like Chad Allegra, Ryan Soane, Jay Donaldson, Matt Parks. Those guys came along and they, you know, made an impact and they took the reins themselves. You know, a few years down the line, we saw guys like Nasty Russ and Virus. Those guys came along. Titan is, you know, another perfect example of a guy who came along roughly in that time frame. And they became big stars. You know, now in the NWF, we have a lot of younger guys. You mentioned Ricky Cardinal. Certainly can't go without mentioning the new number one contenders for the tag team titles, David Tyler and Jordan Clearwater. A couple young guys. David Tyler's been around a couple years now. Jordan Clearwater still in his rookie year with the NWF. I think those guys all have a really bright future in the Northern Wrestling Federation, whether they, you know, become champions, you know, next month or this year. You know, I couldn't tell you, but I think all of them are eventually going to be major, major main event players in the NWF.
Now that actually leads me right into my next question. Regarding the tag team division, We saw recently the Infection seem to be reformed. Do you believe they're a threat, a legitimate threat to the tag team division?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I think the tag team division and the NWF is, you know, always kind of a free-for-all. But we got, you know, a lot of really good, strong, established teams right now. We have, of course, the Infection. They were unsuccessful at WrestleBlast, challenging the tag team champions Ryan Stone, Matt Stevens, collectively known as Tough Justice. But the Infection is always dangerous. You know, multi-time former tag team champions, Virus, former heavyweight champion, Ice, has held titles in the NWF, you know, many times as well. You can't overlook teams like the Everyday Players, you know, also former tag team champions. You have the Natty Boys coming along, the Crimson Mafia and all their various incarnations. Lots of different tag teams in the Northern Wrestling Federation right now that can, you know, at any given moment really give Tough Justice a run for the money. I would be remiss if I didn't mention, I guess, Jay Donaldson and Justin Lane. Even though they lost the number one contenders match back at WrestleBlast, they're still a formidable tag team to be reckoned with as well.
I believe I heard you mention the Crimson Mafia, and at Shot Through the Heart, they will be involved in a 6-man tag team match with legendary Larry D, Roger Ruffin, and Christopher Michael Lotus. Do you think experience will play a factor in that match, or do you think the Crimson Mafia, although they have a couple of experienced guys on their side as well, but do you think the experience of legendary Larry D, Roger Ruffin, and Lotus will help them, or do you think the Crimson Mafia will be supreme with their gang mentality?
You know, that's a good question, because you have a lot of different factors going on in that 6-man tag team match. You know, as far as working as a unit, I think you have to give the advantage to the Crimson Mafia, Wildcat Chris Harris, Lord Crew, the Mercenary Anthony Bryant. These guys, they work together, you know, they team up, and as I said, in various incarnations, you know, on a weekly basis in the NWF, and they have been for a while now. So they work very well together as a unit. You mentioned the experience factor. Of course, Roger Ruffin has all the experience in the world. Larry D, he's a veteran. Christopher Michael Lotus, I think I mentioned this the other night at WrestleBlast. You know, Lotus is certainly not an old wrestler by any stretch of the imagination, but he's been around for, you know, 12, 13 years at this point in the NWF. You know, he's been there, done that, seen a lot of stuff. You know, he's a guy who, you know, has seen everything and done everything at one point. So collectively, the experience of Lotus and Roger Ruffin, Larry D, it's, you know, unmatched for sure. But those guys don't often team up, you know, here and there, maybe, you know, Roger's teamed with Lotus a few times over the years, or, you know, maybe Roger and Larry D have been a tag team, you know, once or twice at some point, but, you know, as a cohesive unit, this is the first time all three of them are going to be together in a match. And as great as they might be individually, it's always a different situation when it's a tag team matchup, and especially when you're going up against a team like the Crimson Mafia, who are going to bend the rules, break the rules, and do everything they can to win.
Well, we just covered everything I had. So, I do actually, you know, we corresponded over Facebook, and you said we could cover anything. So let's go back into your background, since we've pretty much covered everything that I had for this interview. Why don't you tell my fans a little bit about your background in professional wrestling?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's, I didn't even realize this myself until I was at Wrestle Blast the other night, and I was kind of talking to some of the guys, and it dawned on me that January 15th, I celebrated my 17th year in the wrestling business, which makes me feel really, really old. granted, I started out when I was 19 years old, the way that I got into the wrestling business originally is, you know, kind of an interesting story, maybe a little bit different than a lot of people. I was, of course, a big wrestling fan for many, many years. Followed the independent circuit quite a bit, certainly locally in Cincinnati at the time, you know, NWF and HWA and everything, late 90s there were the big promotions. A couple of friends of mine and I had actually started a wrestling newsletter on the internet, and we had a fair amount of subscribers. I think we topped out at one point. We had about 10,000 subscribers, which is pretty good. One of the subscribers ended up being a guy by the name of Kevin Cote, who was a referee for a promotion in Cincinnati called Intense Wrestling Incorporated, or IWI. And they ran shows in Price Hill at what they call the Intense Arena on Warsaw Avenue there. I was vaguely familiar with it, in that I knew that there was wrestling somewhere in that general area, but IWI was very much under the radar at that point. And you know, for better or worse, they pretty much always were very much under the radar for a lot of fans. But this was, you know, a wrestling promotion that was running shows really, you know, 3 or 4 miles from where I lived at the time. So I started going to the shows there. You know, Kevin invited me. He's like, oh, you should really come check out the shows. I started going to the shows there. I started helping out with IWI's website, doing some work with their newsletter and programs and stuff like that they did. Pretty soon I was involved in some other stuff. And a guy, and a funny story of, you know, connections in the wrestling business. One of the guys who really helped me get into the business in the first place is, of course, known as Cassius Ohno nowadays, Chris Hero. At that point was still known as the Wife Beater, not the most politically correct name, but he was wrestling for IWI.
Definitely not politically correct.
Right. You know, and I won't even go into that whole backstory of all that, but
I think I know the backstory. So.
Yeah, you can Google it and find out the backstory of the Wife Beater, but I'll let him tell that story maybe someday. But, you know, it's kind of funny. He was a good friend of mine. Tim Tatum was also, and, you know, still one of my best friends inside and outside of the wrestling business. And another guy who was kind of part of our little clique at that point was a guy named Brent Blades. And that probably doesn't mean a lot to people locally, but Brent Blades was a referee for IWA Mid-South back in the early 2000s. And it was kind of interesting because there were times, I would say right around 1998, 99, HWA was doing shows at a place called Coyotes over in Kentucky. And myself and Chris Hero and Brent Blades and Tim Tatum would go to those shows on occasion. There would be with the four of us sitting there in the crowd, you know, watching these shows. And then within a few years, it was really interesting to see how all four of us, you know, really broke into the wrestling business, but then went in completely separate directions for the most part. Had a little bit of overlap here and there at times, but, you know, we were going to shows and stuff like that. I was helping out at IWI, a little behind the scenes. Jamat, who was the owner, promoter, whatever you want to consider him at IWI, he talked to Tim Tatum and I at one point about they wanted to do an angle where they needed a commissioner of IWI and a referee. So Tim ended up being the referee, and I ended up being the commissioner. And January 15th, 2000, I made my debut with IWI, and I look back on it now, and I had absolutely no business being in the wrestling ring then. You know, I came out there, and I think I had like two or three lines to say on the mic, and I think I walked out there, and I delivered the lines okay, other than the fact I was staring straight down at the mat and didn't even look at the crowd. but, you know, it was a situation where, you know, I guess I was not ready for that. And it ended up being a lot of learning on the fly. So I did some IWI shows, obviously, there for a while. I did a bunch of other kind of smaller independent shows. That first year or two that I was in the business, you know, there were times where I'd, you know, do shows 3, maybe 4 days a week, all over the place, just to gain experience and stuff like that. Some of those shows were not good shows, but definitely gave me the opportunity to learn and experience different things. The cool part to me was I was a commissioner. I started out as a good guy in IWI, as good as a commissioner can ever be, I guess. And pretty quickly I turned heel and ended up managing different people. Ryan Stone was probably the most well-known thing that I did with IWI. The Dynasty, some of the other guys in that group and stuff like that, we had a nice little run there for a couple years with IWI. But as I was doing these other independent shows, I was getting the opportunity. I was refereeing places. I was managing. I was ring announcing, really getting the opportunity to do a lot of different things, which, you know, proved to be very beneficial as my career went on. In 2002, the time came where I knew that I had, you know, even at that short amount of time, done pretty much all I could do with IWI. The opportunity came along for Ryan and I to go to the NWF, which is actually where Ryan had originally trained anyway. so we went to the NWF, and, you know, it was a really eye-opening experience. I had done, as I said, a lot of different wrestling promotions at that point. But then when I came to the NWF, it was, you know, I don't want to say it was like going to the WWE, but it was very, very different. Everything was just so professional, so well run. You know, there were other promotions that I worked for where they would literally be putting together the matches, you know, as the first match of the show was already in the ring, kind of thing. Never, ever happens in the NWF. Everything is always, you know, put together and, you know, well thought out. One of the great things that I love about it is, you know, I show up to the shows and I know that, you know, you don't have to sit down with everybody and tell them every minute detail of what's expected from, you know, security and the referees and the ring announcer and, you know, everybody. They just know what their part to play is. They execute it very well. There's very little ego involved. You know, it's really a tremendous environment to be a part of because everybody just, they get it. And, you know, Roger is tremendous. I've told him this before, but, you know, those first couple years in the business, you know, I had the opportunity, like I said, to do a bunch of different shows. And I thought I was halfway decent and, you know, had a clue, by, you know, my second or third year in the business. And, you know, I'd work with some big name wrestlers and I was like, oh yeah, you know, look at me. I'm pretty cool. You know, I know the Road Warriors or, you know, Greg Valentine or whatever it might be. And, you know, then I got to the NWF and I was like, wow, you know, I had a clue, but I didn't have nearly as big of a clue as I thought I did. And, you know, Roger is just a tremendous teacher, even when he's not trying to teach you. Like, you know, there's, obviously, when you're there at Bone Crushers and he's instructing you, that's learning time. But just sitting around and, you know, having dinner with him or riding in a car with him or, you know, sitting in the back watching a show with him, you know, it's just literally everything that comes out of your mouth, like, wow, he's absolutely right. You know, never thought about that. Yep, that makes sense, you know, and you know, I think that's why he's had such a positive impact on so many guys over the years too, because he's come along and, you know, taught these guys not just in-ring stuff, but, you know, the subtle little things. And it's really amazing to see it. You know, I worked with the NWF there for 3 or 4 years, and, you know, the one thing I will say, the NWF, is it takes a lot of dedication. a lot of dedication. Roger, literally, you hear people who talk about somebody who lives and breathes the wrestling business. Roger Ruffin lives and breathes and eats the wrestling business 24/7, 365, like nobody else I've ever seen in my life. And you have to admire that in him. You know, for some people, and I count myself in this, you know, situation as well. I love wrestling. I love the business. I don't love it as much as Roger Ruffin does. I don't know that anybody loves it as much as Roger Ruffin does. You know, I came to the point in time where, you know, we were doing at times for the NWF, you know, we had maybe a Friday night show at Bone Crushers, which was basically our student shows at that point, you know, a Saturday night show, which would be, you know, in Cincinnati or Fairfield or Wilmington or Blanchester or, you know, West Harrison, Indiana or wherever it might be. There for a while, I was doing Sunday night shows in Georgetown, Kentucky for MWA. And then Monday nights, we had shows for the NWF at the Madison Theater in Covington. So, you know, 4 days a week, wrestling, wrestling, wrestling. And great for experience. Can be taxing on the mind and on the body and on the wallet at times. And, you know, it's funny. I was just having this conversation with a friend of mine not too long ago. It was around 2003-ish, I want to say, maybe 2002, that I had gone to an IWA Mid-South show with Chris Hero. We came back to my house. This was like a Wednesday night. Got back to my house about 4 o'clock in the morning, something like that. And I had to be at work at 8 o'clock in the morning. You know, I was like, you know, I'm going to bed. I got to get like, you know, 2 hours of sleep at least so I can go to work in the morning. He's like, I'm going to stay up and watch tapes. I'm like, and that was kind of like an epiphany moment in my brain where it's like, this guy is crazy dedicated and he is willing to do whatever he can, you know, and sacrifice to make it in the business. And I'm not, you know, it's like, I got to get to my job that pays my bills. and that's a tough thing for some people to come to at some point in their life where they say, you know, do I want to do this that I love and it's fun and I might never make any money at, or do I want to do this thing over here where I'm going to, you know, be able to provide for myself, you know, for my family or whatever it might be. So I really scaled back on the amount of shows I was doing, left the NWF for a while. Of course, you know very well, I was with QCW and then later NEW for a couple years there. Of course, NEW for its entire existence there. QCW just came in right at the tail end of QCW. That was a lot of fun, though. In a lot of ways, I feel like NEW was what IWI could have been. It was a good environment, a lot of the same wrestlers. But then you had some other guys in there, like, you know, Jay Donaldson, who came along a little bit later, Nikita Alanoff, you know, Tim Lutz, obviously, guys like that who were really good, didn't necessarily need a lot of coaching or direction for a lot of things. You know, Eddie Lutz is a great guy. You know, I don't talk to Eddie nearly as much as I'd like to, but you know, Eddie's a really, really good guy.
That makes
cared very deeply. You know, cares very deeply for NEW, and you know, he still speaks very fondly of those days. You know, it really was, you know, a real good locker room environment to be around. You know, unfortunately, as things tend to happen in the wrestling business, didn't last forever. When NEW had, you know, closed up, I think it was probably right around that time that, I contacted, Roger and Kirk Shepard over at the NWF. I was like, so any interest in me coming back, you know, I'll be glad to do whatever is needed for you guys. And it's funny 'cause I had the exact same conversation with Roger when I started with the NWF back in 2002. My exact words were to him, you know, I can referee, I can ring announce, I can manage, I can run the music for you. I don't care what it is. I want to be here and I want to help out. And it was basically the same thing when I came back, you know, to the NWF here in 2008. You know, I'll do whatever you want. I was refereeing there for a while, which is what I did for the majority of my time in NWF. You know, probably refereed 80% of the time, did some ring announcing here or there. But, you know, I got to go back to the NWF and, you know, the last, you know, it's been, what, 8 years or so now since I've been back with the NWF. And, you know, it's great. You know, I don't do nearly as many shows as I did years ago, but I still love being there. I love being around the guys. You know, it's a blessing to be in the wrestling business, period. I think some guys kind of take it for granted. Some guys who say they're in the wrestling business, you know, maybe don't understand what being in the wrestling business really is all about, I guess would be the nice way of putting that. But, you know, to be able to be with the NWF and stuff like that. And, you know, I've had the opportunity to do all kinds of fun stuff. You know, we've, you know, whether it be, you know, to be refereeing or ring announcing or, you know, even wrestling from time to time, quote unquote wrestling, if that's what you call want to call it when I get in the ring. You know, I've had those opportunities to do so many fun things, and, you know, it's cool to be able to go out and do that. And then, you know, my son, who's going to be 9 here later this week, actually, you know, he's been able to see me do this, and, you know, he thinks it's pretty cool. And, you know, it's funny that I can, every once in a while, I try not to be too much a name dropper, but, you know, I'll name drop stuff with him every once in a while. It's like, oh, you know, a few years ago, before he was a big star, there's this guy named, at the time, John Moxley, who came over to my house and watched WrestleMania. And now he's on WrestleMania, you know? And every so often I'll mention that to my son. I'll be like, you know, he sat right there on that couch cushion that you're sitting on right now watching WrestleMania. And now he's there. He's doing it. And, you know, that's a really cool thing. You know, I met so many awesome people, you know, to see guys that I've been on shows with in front of 11 people. Now, you know, get to be in front of 50, 60, 70, 100,000, whatever it might be at WrestleMania now. It's pretty crazy. So, you know, wrestling business has been very good to me. I've been very lucky to be a part of it. You know, the younger me would have been a little bit more brash probably about it, and, you know, like I said, maybe thought that I was greater than what I was or better than what I was. You know, I try to look back at it now as like, I was young and stupid. You know, if I ever said anything to anybody that, you know, really made them mad, I'm sorry. Well, most cases I would be sorry. Not all of them. But, you know, I just look at it as really a great privilege to be a part of it. And, you know, it's fun, it's exciting, you know, you get out there and getting to interact with the crowd is great. I love the role that I have with the NWF right now, where, you know, I get to go out there and I get to make the matches, and I get to say, you know, next month we're going to have a stretcher match, and the crowd goes, oh, you know, or you guys are going to go at it next month and it's going to be in a steel cage. That's always my favorite. When you get to drop the steel cage on them, and, you know, everybody's like, it's a steel cage match. you know, to me, you know, some people in the wrestling business are all about, you know, the moves and, you know, who can do a 450 and, you know, who can, you know, hit somebody with the chair the hardest, or, you know, fall on thumbtacks, or, you know, whatever it might be. And that's fine. The thing that I love about the wrestling business is the emotion that you get from the crowd and being able to manipulate that crowd. It's really an incredible thing. You know, I'm not a theater person at all, but it is really like being, you know, on stage. in a play, except, you know, you don't get to rehearse these things for hours and hours and hours. You go out there live and you're like, all right, I got one take and we got to get it right or pretty darn close to right and hope that we get the right reaction from the crowd. And if we don't, we got to figure out something else for next time. So, you know, I just love going out there and, you know, whether people boo or cheer or cry or laugh or whatever it is, to me, that's what the wrestling business is all about. And I just went on a really long tangent, and I'm sorry.
No, that's absolutely fine. But we are about out of time, so let's go ahead and plug the next few shows.
Absolutely.
For the NWF.
You know, I'll tell you, we got a bunch of great stuff coming up this Saturday. We're back at Bone Crushers, 2616 Coleraine Avenue. As I say, always the bone crushing out of action at Bone Crushers. So we will be back there this Saturday night. We're coming back to Fairfield, Shot Through the Heart. It's February 18th. Titan defending against Pompano Joe. That big six-man tag with the Crimson Mafia against Larry D., Roger Ruffin, Christopher Michael Lotus. Stretcher match with Jesse Hyde and Ricky Cardinal. The professional Brandon Fields is going to be back with the NWF. We're going to see the debut of a new guy. Calypso is going to be making his debut at Shot Through the Heart. So lots of good stuff there. And then also on March the 4th, NWF is going back to Laurel, Indiana. We did a show in Laurel back in November. So we're really excited to be going back there again here in March. Should be a good show there too. NWF is, we're all over the place. Indiana, Kentucky, Ohio, and we're always looking for new venues, so keep checking NWFWrestling.com or Facebook page or Bustin' Loose, and, you know, we get around.
Absolutely. Well, we're about out of time, so I'm going to go ahead and let you go, and I'm going to wrap things up. So I want to thank you
Thanks,
for being on the show.
Thank you so much. Hope to do again sometime.
I would love it. Have a good night. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Nate Telly, NWF CEO. And be sure to catch any of those great NWF shows. And so for Nate Telly and for myself, this is Ace Diamond. Good night, everybody.